Do it again. Mike did it. Bibby stops. Pops. Three. Bibby. Good hit. Again. A back-to-back nights. Oh, 1.5 seconds. No timeouts. Tyreek. At the hole.
Cousins gets a touch, but he helps out.
That is a marriage jam! DeMarcus Cousins nearly brought down the backboard and rim.
You're now listening to the Kings Court Podcast, presented by SackKingsNation.com.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Kings Court Podcast. I'm your host, Vince Miracle, and joining me today is very special guest, your CSN Kings insider, James Hamm. James, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks, Vince. Good to be back.
How has your offseason slash summer been? Because I haven't really had a chance to talk to you since the season ended.
You know, it was kind of a quiet summer. I spent most of the summer rebuilding the exterior of my home. So we painted, we redid all the front yard, all the landscaping, did a whole lot of work, put some rock on the front of the house. So when I'm not the Kings insider, I am a busy remodeler of homes, my own home. But yes, that's what I do in my summers.
So when are you going to invite me over for like a barbecue or something? I want to see how good this work is, because then maybe like I have some stuff that need to be fixed. Maybe I can hire you.
Yes, yeah. I don't do anyone else's work. I only do my own. but I was raised by a construction worker. My dad was in the Lathers Union for 38 years. And I was raised building our own houses. As far as a barbecue – during the summer, I'll invite you up. You can come out. You can hang out on the boat. We've got a pontoon boat on Lake of the Pines that we go out and chill all summer long.
Look at that. Put him on the spot, and he said, I can go. Yes! I'll be waiting for the invite. All right, James. Well, we actually have a little bit to cover today, and I kind of want to just jump right into it because it's kind of significant news, and I guess mainly due to the fact that it wasn't expected, and then to get the response from a former Kings front office executive, I think was pretty shocking, at least from my standpoint. And let's go ahead and start off with the very first one. Vivek Ranadive does an interview with USA Today and Sam Amick. What were your initial takeaways from that interview?
It's tough. I shook my head. You know, it's not like people don't know what's true and what's not. And so when you try to set the record straight and you think you're doing, you know, what's right, sometimes what you're doing is you're giving your side of a story and not everyone's side of a story. And I don't know if he had, I don't think he had malicious intentions, but sometimes the best thing you can do with the past is leave it in the past and move on, especially with so much positivity surrounding the Kings at this moment. I mean, we got a new arena, you got a new in love with, you got a whole bunch of new players. Your team is 0-0 on the season, which means there are endless possibilities as to what could happen. And I don't think there's any reason to distract from that. And unfortunately, Vivek distracted from that. It'll be a momentary distraction, but it just furthers a narrative that keeps coming back to haunt this team. And it's something that, you know, should have been put to bed and just left there. And, you know, again, having Jeff Petrie respond is probably that shows you the buttons that were pushed, because he's about as quiet a guy as you're ever going to find. And so it's just kind of it's another situation in Sacramento. And until it's all about basketball, it shouldn't be about this other stuff. It's really, it wears on you. It does.
Yeah, and you brought up Jeff Petrie, which is exactly one of what I wanted to jump into next, which is, you know, he kind of took a lot of slight shots at Vivek in his interview with Deadspin. First off, I thought it was very surprising that he actually emailed out to the writer that did the interview and wanted to actually give his side of the story, and then to say that he saw Vivek in an 8 to 10 minute interview as an annoying little chap, and I think I'm paraphrasing. I'm trying to look for the actual quote, but same thing with the Vivek interview. What were your initial takeaways from something like that?
Well, as someone who covered Jeff for quite a while, and I know how reserved he is, I was very surprised, but not really. Because number one, he's always quirky with his words, and he's very bright. I mean, he's a Princeton grad. He's a very, very bright individual, and sometimes his jokes don't always go over really well in the room because he sometimes can talk over the head of people, or at least attempt to. And you know, Jeff's mannerisms are what they are, and what I got from his side of the story and why he went public was, and I've heard, like, this wasn't like an open wound. This was reopening something that he had put to the side and really moved away from. And to have something that he thought sort of devalued what he and his staff had done, it was hurtful to him. And he was, if anything, Jeff was extremely loyal. Him and Wayne Cooper worked together for years. His executive assistant worked with him for years, his media relations staff for years. And we're talking decades. Some of these people worked with him, extremely loyal. And when you poke the Papa Bear, he's going to lash out. And I didn't know that Petrie would come that hot, but that just shows you how protective he was. And I think at the end of the day, you know, there's a lot you can say about all the things that Vivek had to say in that article. And I'm not going to sit here and fact check the article for you, because that's only going to cause even more issues. But you can't just say things and just put them out there and have them have no repercussions. And, you know, it's an unfortunate situation, and I hope the Kings can move forward from it quickly. But it's still something that you just can't run around with your reality, your own reality, and think that that's everyone else's reality. And I think that's where we are kind of in this situation.
Right. And you know, I want to kind of go back to what the interview is. I think what Vivek was trying to do with this interview, and just say that, you know, he's grown as a owner. Like, you don't need to perceive him in some sort of way. You've now covered him since his time in ownership. I believe it's been now 3 years since he's been the owner. Have you seen a growth or a more knowledgeable owner in Vivek Ranadive, who's probably stepped now aside and has let, you know, the front office guys like a GM Vlade Divac or and his entire team start running the team? Or do you still think he's more of a hands-on type of owner?
I think he's still more hands-on, and I don't know if that's in every aspect, but I think what we have seen is over the last couple of years, he's taken a step back as far as his public persona and how much he's in front of cameras and how much he gives people. And I think we now see why that sometimes it's better to step back away from the cameras and just let the basketball ops side do their job, let the business side do their job, and you're sort of an overseer of the entire situation. And I think it's really, you know, when you don't do that, when you feel like you have to interject, you better have a clear message. And I think he has gotten better, but I don't know how much. Like, if you're going to be inside the walls of that arena, I'm not there every day dealing with him. And, you know, I know his staff is. I mean, I deal with the basketball side, and I'm in, you know, every scrum with Coach Jaeger, and I, you know, have conversations with Divac or Ken Catanella, you know. But I don't see him like hovering above the basketball floor. Now, he might before we get in there. I just don't know that. But I do know that he is still very involved in every bit of the operations. And you know what? If I were an owner of an NBA team, I would be too. And I would hope that I would bring in people that I trust and that you know, support me and that fulfill the things that I'm not an expert in. But at the same time, if I'm an owner, it's, you know, it's mine, and I want to be part of it.
And I'll have this be the last question on it, because I do want to get your season preview, and you're going to be our very first guest that gets to do the season preview with us before we get to actual the King's Court's, mine, Joe's, and John's King's Court episode of where we season preview for the Kings. Just rambled on there for so long. Don't know why I did that. Anyways, the final question here on this topic is, you know, there was a lot of conversation about a potential, I guess, splitting on the ownership, on who agreed and who disagreed. And I don't know, there hasn't been a lot of talks over the offseason. It really does seem as if the Kings are starting to repair that broken front office. Could this possibly start opening for more people to start coming out? Because there was, even after that report came out, there were people tweeting it that were former Kings management and former King workers that were saying, I believe everything that Jeff is saying, and there's things that are really unknown. I'm glad he spoke out. There's people tweeting that stuff out. I mean, do you think that this can open the wound a little bit more that was almost, I would say, almost covered through this offseason on how well the Kings have been keeping quiet?
I don't know. I mean, again, this is one man stepping in front of stepping into a room and having a conversation on the record. And again, I don't know that he does this again. I don't think anytime really soon, because what he did is, now again, if he decides to talk before the opening night of Golden One Arena, he has to know, Golden One Center, excuse me. He has to know that one of the questions might not be about basketball, and might not be about the arena, and might not be about how great the night is. It might be about him and what he had to say. And so I don't know. This really, it puts him in an awkward situation. It puts a lot of people in an awkward situation. Now, whether or not, you know, we're going to see more of this, people coming out, I don't think so. I mean, again, I think this isn't a Donald Trump situation where, you know, you say one thing and then every newspaper in the country has some woman coming out of the woodwork. And whether any of it's true or not, I'm not judging. I'm just comparing a situation where somebody says something and the fact checkers can dig in and say, well, this may be correct. This and this are patently false. I'm not going to do that to Vivek or the Kings organization. I don't think right now, you know, again, why are we revisiting this stuff? And I know he brought it up, but at the same time, there's other things that we should be moving on to. I mean, that's just the end of it. There are a lot of other things that we should be moving on to, and not worrying about who liked who and who did what and why Drake was at a basketball game or why he was in a locker room. I mean, I get that he wanted to get his side of the story out, but it's always going to be his side. And somewhere in between there's a reality of what happened, and maybe he's 100% accurate on everything and maybe he's not, and that's not for me to judge right now, because to be honest with you, it's all old news. It's all stuff that if you just want to go back and read any part of that era, it's not that hard to do, and you can fact check pretty easily.
I'm going to pause the show right here to give a shout out to our sponsor. Everyone go to BrickHouseIndustries.com and check out all of their apparel, from hats, shirts, and socks. And when checking out, be sure to use promo code KingsCourt, and you'll get a 10% discount right on us. And hey, if you want to keep up to date with all of their apparel and you don't want to keep typing in that URL, good news, they're actually on your phone and apps on Instagram and on Twitter. Go follow them at BrickHouse_IND. And James, you brought up something that I think is 100% true. It's time to start talking about things that are different. That stuff's in the past. Let's start looking to the future and going to be in the new Golden One Center. Before I start dissecting this team with you, what are your thoughts on the new arena?
Oh, it's amazing. It's incredible. I mean, it should be the focus of everything.
It's beautiful.
Is absolutely beautiful. And the other thing I'd like to point out too is one of the things that happened this week that I thought was just absolutely amazing. The Sacramento Kings planted a lemon tree and a placard out in front of the arena, right to the left of the front door, in honor of the Lemonade Boys. And if people don't know the Lemonade Boys, they're this young group of boys, 8-9 year olds at the time, who started selling lemonade, trying to earn money for the new arena. They gave the money to the city. The city gave the money back to the boys, which has now been given to the Kings, which is going into a foundation that they'll get to make decisions on. And they're going to sell lemonade from that spot outside the game to earn more money to go towards some of the Kings' youth initiatives for kids like this who step out. Everything about this arena, it has some sort of meaning to somebody. And I think that's really cool that people of Sacramento, the people of Sacramento, are going to get to walk into something that's theirs and special, and that a lot of people had a hand in some small way of saving or helping get built. And I think it's really, it's a community asset that people are going to be amazed with. I was at Paul McCartney. I'll be at Maroon 5 on Saturday night. It's a great concert venue. I think it's spectacular. And it's just a whole new world for Sacramento, something that, you know, we haven't seen before in the city of Sacramento. Even when ARCO 2 was built, it was built on the cheap. It was buried by the Auburn Palace, the Palace at Auburn Hills, that the Detroit Pistons played in. It was buried by that arena in like the first year it was put into existence. I don't think that the Golden One Center is going to be outshined for a while. It's a really, really remarkable building.
The only criticism I have about the arena, and it's actually nothing bad at all, it's just I want to know what that statue is. I don't know what the one that's right in front of the door. It looks like a Jolly Rancher, like a lollipop that you can buy, like a fancy lollipop that you buy at a candy store. Other than that, I absolutely love the arena. I was on the second deck at the Maccabi Haifa game, and I just wanted to see what the view was like on the stair down. And there's really no bad seats. It's just like Sleep Train, ARCO. There's no bad seats in that arena, no matter where you are. And I'm actually going to be going to the UFC fight that's going to be held in there, and I actually want to be on the second row for that fight, because you'll be able to get to see on the inside and see everything that's going on. And because of the way I think the seats are set, I don't think you're missing out on anything. I think you just have a great view. So I actually really loved everything about the arena. I just want to know, and James, maybe you can answer that for me, what is the statue supposed to be?
It's called the Coloring Book, but to me it looks like Pikachu fell into like Easter egg dye, and so I'm not sure. It's an interesting piece, but you know what? Art is supposed to elicit some sort of response, positive, negative, as long as it has some sort of, it does something. And I think by the fact that we're having this conversation, it served its purpose. And I think a lot of people will have some sort of crazy response to it. And I think that's a good thing. You know, I think they could have done a lot of different things with that, but at the same, it's not like you can put a Rembrandt out there, and it's certainly not like you can put a statue of Kevin Johnson out there. You know, we haven't really seen what everything around it is going to look like, but it's just another piece of what's going on down there. And it's intriguing. I think it may be funky, it may look like Pikachu, but at the same time, I think it is intriguing to most people.
Yeah, no, another reason why I thought it was kind of interesting to look at, and what popped in my head right away is, if you ever have a TNT game there, and they can definitely host a show right there in that center area where everyone's going to be walking in, I could see Charles saying something about it. I'm like, what is that thing? I don't know, I just think that's pretty funny, but
that's where our set is, right inside the doors. We're right inside the big glass doors. Our CSN set for 40 games this year will be live at the arena, as opposed to, I don't know, 6 or 8 games the last couple of years where we were hiding in section 113 on the concourse. Our set will be right there overlooking the court. It's going to be absolutely spectacular. I'm super excited. Not only Jim Cosimore, but Doug Christie. I'll be on the set a bunch, and it's just going to – you're going to get one of the best pre- and post-game shows you're ever going to find just because of the location. And I think it's going to be a really, really fun season to see, you know, what you're saying, where it looks – the view right there is just so stunning, and I'm really excited about that.
Well, let's start talking about this team now, James, because I definitely feel this team has the potential to be something with now Dave Joerger at the helm. And the only question mark I really have is at that point guard position, or at least until Darren Collison comes back. I have not been high on Ty Lawson, even when they were signing him, even when they were looking for him. I think it's a decent signing with reward. I'm not expecting a lot from him. But he did have a very nice game against the Maccabi Haifa team in the Golden 1 Center for the team's first win. I think he had 13 points, 7 rebounds, and 8 assists or something like that to go along with 3 steals. But that's international play. He hasn't really played that well in the Kings' first 3 preseason games. But what are your thoughts on Lawson now that you've seen 3 games of him with the Sacramento Kings?
You know, I think he was a really, really, really good player 2 years ago. And it's not... I don't even know if it's fully 2 years, just not last year. And that's something he's, you know, like, look, he averaged like 15.8 points and 10 point something assists, or 9 point something assists. He had that 2 year run where he was exceptional, and his ability to push the tempo and to change the pace and to hit an open three and to drive at the basket, to initiate the defense early. I think these are all good things about Ty Lawson. Now, he has the dark side as well. He's had off the court issues. And last year he was in the wrong system completely for him. They took the ball out of his hands completely because James Harden does nothing but dribble the air out of the ball. And he was the wrong piece to go to that team. And he really struggled. Now, I think the one thing I'll point out is that the Kings are going to run a high post offense. It's not going to have the George Karl run up and down the court, you know, do whatever you want feel to it all the time. It will have bursts of that. And I think if Ty Lawson is a starter for the first 8 games of the season, you're in pretty good shape. And if he is a reserve playing 25 minutes a game for the rest of the season, I think you're in really good shape, because I do believe he'll be one of the best reserve point guards in the NBA, and he has an ability to break people down and to get to the rim and to open things up for his teammates. He's very unselfish. Everything that I've, you know, talking to him even yesterday, I find him to be engaging. He's a nice guy. I've heard that he's a really good teammate, that people like him, and he's a guy who needs a second chance, and Sacramento's always been a place for second chance players. Hopefully he takes full advantage of it. If not, he's on a non-guaranteed deal, and the Kings can pull the rug out from him at any moment. And I think he knows that. He's trying to rebuild his career. He likes Sacramento. Everyone likes the new arena. He likes his teammates. He played with Aaron Aflalo in Denver, so you already have a starting backcourt to open the season that has some continuity. And I like the fact that Aflalo and Collison played together at UCLA, and that they're buddies with Matt Barnes because they're all UCLA guys. And I think you really start piecing this team together. They have a lot of flexibility, a lot of movement. And I think Lawson, whether you love him or hate him, I don't think he's going to be that bad. I think he's going to impress people, and I think the Kings are going to want him here more than 1 year.
Along with Lawson, the Kings brought in 11 new faces to this roster. You brought up a couple of them, Aflalo, Matt Barnes, Anthony Tolliver. Who do you think, out of all the free agents that came to Sacramento this offseason, will have the biggest impact this season for the Kings?
Well, I've been asked this question before, and I've said I think it'll be Aflalo, because the Kings have had a void at the shooting guard position for so long. I mean, it's just brutal, and it's not a jab at Ben McLemore. Ben McLemore is a young player who was thrust into a role when he wasn't ready for it. I mean, 2 years ago, this team started the season with only Ben McLemore and Nick Stauskas, a rookie, at the shooting guard position. That's it. And you can't succeed that way. And this team has lost repeatedly because they play 4-on-5 basketball. And not the kind of 4-on-5 basketball where someone's cherry-picking down and standing under the rim that you hear from, you know, the early days of Vivek Ranadive. I'm talking about a position that just doesn't work. And offensively, defensively, it hasn't worked. And so I think Aflalo instantly gives you credibility at the two. But as I've watched this team develop, and I now know how big of a role that I think Ty Lawson is going to have, I think he has an equal chance to be as big an addition as anyone, or a bigger addition than anyone. He will be able to start. He has a huge amount of career starts under his belt. But if he can give you something different off the bench that allows a guy like McLemore, Caspi, Barnes, Willie Cauley-Stein, those guys to get out on the floor and sprint and break up sort of the monotony that you sometimes get with a Dave Joerger high post system, I think he has the potential to really help this team and make them really dangerous. That second unit could really, really be dangerous and have an ability to get separation from teams where they haven't had that in the past.
Aflalo was another one of those guys for me that I was actually not a huge fan of the Kings signing. I don't really enjoy seeing what he can do on the floor. I think he's a few years past his prime. But at the same time, I've seen him play now as well for the last couple games, and I think what he brings to this team is actually exactly what they needed, like you said, which is a strong and consistent veteran two guard, which is they haven't had in a couple seasons. And I think in this system, I was asked this by Joe about, you know, who do you think would flourish and who do you think would fail in the system that Joerger's running with that high post offense. And Aflalo has the ability to post up on shooting guards. And I think that's where he can take advantage in a system like that. And that's where I think he could probably be really good for this team, because he's also knocking down his jump shot. So let me ask you the same question that was asked to me. Who do you think flourishes in this system that Dave Joerger's running? And who do you think probably fails a little bit in this system?
Well, I think the flourish is DeMarcus Cousins. The system is absolutely built for DeMarcus, because the high post, I love the high post offense. And, you know, it's called a bunch of different things, but at the same time, you know, it's something that it will have a similar look and feel to what we saw from the Rick Adelman era. It'll just take a long time to get there, because continuity and fluid motion and cuts and who's going where at all times, it's going to take a little bit of time. But DeMarcus can absolutely shoot from the top of the key. He can take people off the dribble from the top of the key. He can throw it down to Rudy Gay or Aaron Aflalo in the post, or they can do the same thing for him. They'll be able to move this thing around and mix and match and get Cousins in really, really good matchups. So I really like this system for Cousins specifically. I think he's also an exceptional passer and a willing passer. He just has to have the faith in the people around him. And when you add a guy like Aaron Aflalo, I really do believe that it opens things up for, you know, the trust that you get from having a 8 or 10 year veteran of the NBA who has averaged, you know, over 10 points a game for his career. I think it's 12 points a game for his career. Again, if he's reliable and you know he's going to knock down the shot, you're going to pass it to him. And that's something that Cousins has struggled a little bit with, putting faith in young players that don't hit the shot and then the frustration that ensues. And so now if you have guys like Tolliver who will knock down open jumpers, you've got all the way around Lawson and Collison shooting threes at the top of the key. I think this is a good mix for Cousins, and it can get better from here. As far as who's going to struggle on this system, unfortunately, it really does look like it's Willie Cauley-Stein. And I hope that he comes around and that he locks in. But the thing that made Willie intriguing in his rookie season was, I would say, it's that he had an ability to fit right in George Karl's system. He was a rim runner in John Calipari's system, which John Calipari's system is just the same exact thing as George Karl's system. Vance McDonald's, you know, was the motion offense. And I think that Willie is having to relearn the game of basketball as we speak. And that's really tough. I think eventually he can be a high post big. He can actually knock down a jumper. He's worked with Peja Stojakovic during the summer. He's shooting nonstop, trying to get better either at the top of the key or on the baseline. I think defensively he can really thrive in this system. It's just going to take time. He has to relearn everything. So my initial thoughts is Kosta Kupis is going to play a pretty decent amount of time because Jaeger likes veterans, number one. He's comfortable with Kosta because he had him in Memphis, number two. And number three, I just don't know that Willie is ready to play 30-plus minutes a night in day one in this system because he's never done it before.
That's actually an interesting pick. I chose Omri Caspi, and I want to see if you agree with me on it. Is, you know, we've seen him play down the three games, and he hasn't really had that breakout game, or at least the scoring game that you'd expect from a guy like Omri Caspi. The shots just haven't been falling from 3-point range. And, you know, the thing that he was really good at last season was being able to get out on the fast break, one, and two, being able to catch the ball on the wing from an across pass from DeMarcus Cousins in the post, and being able to slice down to the basket and do that awkward looking floater that just always goes in. I mean, he was my candidate for somebody that probably doesn't succeed in this system. And also, we've seen Jaeger and the team try to go to him in the post a couple times during this preseason, and I don't think that's a good look for him. What are your thoughts on Caspi, or at least my thoughts on Caspi possibly not succeeding in this system?
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, number one, you shouldn't post up Caspi, so I don't think that that's going to be something that we find all the time with Caspi in the post.
Good. I agree.
But Caspi still is the best three-point shooter this team has, which if you have three-point shooters, it opens everything up in this offense. I think that's a really good thing. And dropping him in the corner is a really nice thing. The other thing that I've always loved about Omri Caspi is that he has a great first step, and he's an incredible cutter. And in this system, cutters are going to always be at a premium. They're a guy, he's a guy that can catch and finish on the drive, and I think that's really going to help. And lastly, Jaeger plays a really aggressive style defense, and while it doesn't have the switching component that George Karl's defense had, it has an aggressive overplay style, so it allows you to play passing lanes. I mean, what we saw against the Warriors, the Kings had 17 steals. And Caspi is still going to get his runouts, especially, again, when you pair him with Ty Lawson and Darren Collison and Ben McLemore in a run-and-gun type system. Now, he's in a dogfight for minutes because Anthony Tolliver is a guy. If you look at Tolliver, Barnes, and Caspi, they're all going to play a stretch four. Caspi and Barnes will both play some three, but there's going to be an issue here. Somebody's going to win and someone's going to lose. And you can't go 10 or 11 deep every single night. And if I look at Collison and Lawson at the one, and I look at Aflalo and McLemore at the two, and I look at Gay and either Barnes or Caspi at the three, at Tolliver, and either Caspi or Barnes at the four with Willie Cauley-Stein and DeMarcus and Kosta, I start running, and I haven't even mentioned Garrett Temple, I start running into 11 or 12 players. And so somebody's going to lose. I don't think it will be Caspi, and I think the really huge thing for Caspi is he's the only one that's an actual free agent this summer. He took a really, really low budget deal two summers ago, or 2-year, $6 million deal. And, you know, when Tolliver's making over $8 million and you look at what Barnes is making, you know, $6.5 million, And Caspi's making $3 million and he's equal or better than, then this is a huge season for him. He needs to have a breakout season and to continue sort of this growth that he's shown over the last couple of years. And so I think he will play well in this system. It's just like everyone else, it's going to take a little bit of time. And I'll point this out too. Caspi's had a hip issue that he's been trying to work through, and it set him down for about a week. And he wasn't in practice yesterday for Yom Kippur, but overall he'll be fine, and I think he'll be a valuable piece once Jaeger sees that the energy and really the speed that he brings from the wing position, he's going to get a lot of minutes.
From one small forward to the next, I have to ask you before I start getting into your season projection here for the Kings, what do you think will happen with Rudy Gay? Will he be traded before the season begins, which it's looking less likely? And do you think the Kings move him this season?
It's tough. You know, Rudy's made it very clear that he's ready to bolt after the season. And with every waking day, his value gets lower, unless the Kings are completely out of the playoff run in February, if they're completely out of the playoff picture. And there are a lot of teams floating around, teams like, you know, OKC or Miami that might need that big boost. You might be able to deal him for picks. You might be able to deal him for picks and a young player at that point to help someone get over the top. If I'm predicting, I don't think he's with the club the entire season. And if I'm really looking at the roster right now and how it's constructed, I like Rudy Gay, and I think the Kings are a better team right now with him, especially if what I've seen so far is when you pull Cousins, Aflalo, and Gay off the floor, all of a sudden you have uh-oh moments where either you got to run really fast or you're going to have trouble scoring. I think we're going to see Gay and Cousins play opposite minutes of each other a lot. They'll start together, but then one of them will sit while the other stays in the game, and they'll use them either in the post or at the top of the key. And you're going to see sort of a Aflalo, Gay, or Cousins will always be on the floor because of their ability to post. And so I think he's still valuable to this team, and he's still more valuable to the Kings than he is to almost any other team, I believe, at this point, just because they don't have another number two scorer. They don't have anyone like him. And what you don't want to get into is a situation like Aflalo was in last year with the Knicks, where all of a sudden he becomes like the second scoring option or the third scoring option. You need him to be a third, fourth scoring option. And if you trade Rudy Gay, then you're looking at, you know, Collison, Cousins, Gay, and Aflalo. And you pull Gay out of that system, you have to have a scorer coming back. And then how do you rebalance your roster? So if I were the Kings, and, you know, again, I've said this before, if Greg Monroe is really on the block and you think you could get Greg Monroe to come in and instantly fill the power forward position for the next 2 years and give you a high level of play as a high post, you know, and low post big that can seamlessly fit in with Cousins, then I would strongly consider doing that and allowing guys like Caspi and Barnes and Garrett Temple and even a little bit of Ben McLemore to cover that three position and make a move. But I don't know that the Kings are going to do that. Vlade has said they're not going to trade Gay, not right now. And I don't know. I don't know if that's a good idea or a bad idea. I just know that there's a lot of excitement, and if you're not in it and you don't want to win and you don't want to be here, then I pull the trigger quickly. But if Rudy has made it clear to them that, like, look, I'm going to be a professional, I'm going to do everything I can in my power to be part of the team, then you keep him and you let it ride out. And, you know, who knows, maybe the team is great and or at least better than it has been, and they're making a playoff push and he's having a good time. He says, you know what, I'll stick around for another two or three seasons. Maybe that happens, but I don't know. That's one of the tougher things to deal with.
Do you think there's any possibility that his mind has changed?
As of right now?
No, just like, even if let's say the Kings do make the playoffs, I mean, it just from that interview, I mean, it just seems like Rudy Gay is ready to leave. But I mean, you said there's a possibility maybe he has a great time and it falls into place, but even if the Kings made the playoffs, do you think that Rudy Gay is basically checked out of this team?
I don't think he's totally checked out, but I certainly think that he would like to find somewhere else. He would like to be shipped somewhere else to play as of right now. But that doesn't mean that things won't change. And, you know, again, he's about the most laid back guy that you can possibly be. He's a good teammate. And he is a leader, even if he doesn't want to be here. He does, you know, he is a good guy. Everyone likes him. And he's still very, very talented. And So the Kings aren't going to give them away for nothing, and that's what a lot of teams come calling with when you have issues like this. You know, we'll give you player X and this type of draft pick, and if you think that you could be better with him, even if it's for one season, and what you're going to get in return isn't going to help you, then I don't see the Kings making any they're not going to do anything radical. And, you know, they've had it out with him. They've had the conversations with him about, you know, what they expect from him, and he said, you know, what he expects from them. And then I'll also point out that when Rudy Gay got to Sacramento, he had an option for 19 point something million dollars. And I think Rudy might think he can get more than what he's making, more than 14.4 million this summer. But if he doesn't play up to his potential and he sees that the writing might be on the wall, that his contract might not be what it is again, I wouldn't be shocked to see Rudy Gay do the same exact thing that he did the first time, and that's stay into his contract for one more year. But there's just so much money floating out there. So we're going to have to wait and see, man. It's a tough one. I think his mind can be changed, but he's got to buy in and really feel like he's part of it and part of the future. And, you know, the Kings they need to win. I think that's the biggest thing. They have to win, and then you go from there.
You brought up winning, and that's what this team needs to do. That's what a lot of fans are hoping that they can do in their first year at the Golden 1 Center. Asking you point blank, James, what is your win projection for the Sacramento Kings this season?
Oh, it's so tough. you know, Vegas has them at 32.5.
Yep.
I thought at the beginning of training camp, if they could avoid drama, maybe the week before training camp began, if they could avoid the drama, 40 to 41 wins with a radical plus minus of 7, because I think they could actually be much better and they could be much worse. The much worse really depends on outside influences. What happens on non-basketball play, which is the Rudy Gay situation. I think by the time the season that training camp opened and Rudy Gay was already having issues, I dropped that win total to 38 because honestly, distractions are distractions and they're going to come and they're going to go. But when you get to February, this team could drop a couple of games while they're wondering whether Ben McLemore, whether Rudy Gay, whether Kostas Koufos, whether all these people are still going to be on the roster. And so things are going to get a little dicey. And usually during times of diciness with the Sacramento Kings, they usually fail on the court. And so 38 wins, but again, I'm going to give you a plus or minus 7, because I think this team, if things really fall apart and things really get ugly with Gay and with, you know, with either Gay and Cousins, whatever it might be, this team could slide back down to that 31-win plateau. Or if things go really well, and I watched them play in Golden State, well, in San Jose against Golden State, they have the depth, they have the personality, they have the gamers, if you will, to go out and shock people. And so I'm not putting anything past this team. It's probably the toughest season to gauge where this team will be. And, I mean, we always get it wrong. This team never wins as many games as anyone thinks they will, except for Vegas. I mean, Vegas has a pretty good peg on it. Bill Simmons has a pretty good peg on what this team will do, which it's almost like he predicts chaos. So I almost wonder if Bill Simmons doesn't, like, slide in the building and, like, stir things up when he's like a leprechaun. You know, he causes a bunch of issues. But he seems to know what they're going to do, and they usually are around the loss total, the win loss total that he says they will be. But this team has potential. They like, don't be fooled by a modest offseason. A modest offseason brought professionals at so many different positions for this team that I think can really, I mean, again, I think last year what we saw with Rondo and Collison, that was a good point guard combo, but I think the Lawson-Collison combo has the potential to be much better. I know that Aflalo will be better than what they've had in the past there, and still having Ben McLemore there, that position got decidedly better. Rudy Gay is still at the three, but now you have Caspi and you have Matt Barnes. Matt Barnes can really bring it defensively and brings a fire to this team, so I think you've got better there. And a lot of people loved Quincy Acey and sort of what he brought to the table, but I'm going to be honest with you, Anthony Tolliver is a much better player than Quincy Acey, and he's just more seasoned. He's more defined in what he does. He's an exceptional shooter from the corner. He plays hard-nosed defense. He'll get you a rebound. He's a great teammate like Acey, but I just think he's a more well-rounded player. And I think Cousins comes into camp a better teammate and a better player than he was last year and the year before. And so I think there are ways that you could see that this team is deeper, more versatile, better overall, has a better chance to succeed with a very, very, very good coach with a very good system for this group of players. So those are all positives. Now, it could all unwind, and we know, because it all unwinds every year, and it goes to hell in a handbasket. And it does. I mean, it's always the mutiny waiting to happen. I don't see the mutiny this year. And so that's the big thing, because I don't think Dave Yeager is going anywhere for a long time. He likes it here. They like him already. He has an ability to capture the imagination of his players. And that's something that I don't think anyone outside of Michael Malone has had since Rick Adelman left. And the one thing, and maybe Michael Malone had the ability to capture the imagination of his players, but Yeager has sort of Malone's defensive-minded like tactics with a really, really good offensive system that, if given enough time, will work for the Sacramento Kings' favor. So I'm just going to say there is a huge swing here. Potential to be great, I don't know. But potential to be a really good team that fights for an eighth spot, I do believe that they have that potential. And also the potential to absolutely destroy all the positive goodness that comes with a new arena and just at a whim. And so we'll have to wait and see.
So 38 wins is from your CSN Kings insider, James Hamm, with the plus or minus of 7 games. I'm leaning towards 35, James. I just feel like Aflalo at some point is going to get injured. I think Darren Collison's going to get his yearly injury. And so that might hurt it a little bit, but I have a plus 5 on mine. I have a plus 5 or minus 5 games. So that's my prediction so far, but I'm allowed to change it until I do my season preview. I might keep throwing that out there. Before I sign you off here, James, let the fans out there know where they can find you online. And also, what's your favorite Maroon 5 song?
You know, I'm going to Maroon 5 on Saturday. I don't know what my favorite song is. I'll say this. You know, again, I'm always long-winded. I apologize. But I don't like a lot of modern music because I think the singing is just gone downhill so much. And it, you know, you get a great track here and there, but I love big, beautiful, bold voices. And Adam Levine has such an incredible voice that it reminds me of, you know, guys from the 80s that could really belt, like Steve Perry from Journey. And while he doesn't have that good of a voice, he still has like incredible pipes. So I'm excited to see somebody who can really, really sing when I go to the concert. And you know, like Paul McCartney, just absolutely wonderful show. But again, I'm excited to see. I don't care what they sing. I'm good with whatever. I'm just gonna have a good time and enjoy a show where I know I'm gonna get high quality vocals, which is something I enjoy. And let's see, where you can find me at csmbayarea.com, CSN California, at James_Hamm on the Twitter box. I have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/JamesHammKings, I believe. You can find me there, and you'll be able to find me on the CSN Kings Insider podcast and on pre- and post-game show all season long with Doug Christie, Jim Cosimore, and Katie Christensen doing sideline stuff. So you can find me all over the place, Vince. I guess that's the really the end of it, right? All over, all things CSN, you can find me.
And don't forget to mention, you also have an amazing podcast that comes out with the show every single Friday with Hoop-Ball owner and founder Aaron Brewski of, well, what do you do? Hoop-Ball.com.
We do. We've had that show for a long time, and I love the podcast format. I think it is the new long form journalism, and that's sad because I like long form. But if more people listen this way as opposed to reading long pieces. So
you guys go check him out on all those platforms. Subscribe to this show here on iTunes or on YouTube, youtube.com/StatKingsNation.com. You guys can follow me on all social media platforms at VM Center. James, I hope they play Sunday morning when it's falling. See, I can do a little Maroon 5. I can also play that on piano. Bang. Follow me on all social media platforms again at VM Center, at James_Ham on Twitter. And until next time, Sacramento Kings fans, bye-bye.